hot.
You are listening to Bridging the Social Distance. My name is Jenny Mitchell, and I recorded this show here at CFRU, Guelph's campus and community radio station, as a means of creating a platform for us to share ideas and feelings and perspectives in the wake of this global pandemic that is COVID-19. I was afraid that people would get isolated or I would lose the opportunity to chat with my community and find out how everyone is doing, so I made this show. If you're listening and you would like to get involved or be interviewed, you can contact me at mobile@cfru.ca. I'd like to provide the disclaimer that these interviews were recorded at different points in time, so situations in some of these locations may have changed. This show is also being syndicated for CIOI in Hamilton, Ontario. Today I'm speaking with Juanita Burnett here in Guelph, Ontario, one of Bridging the Social Distance's most devoted listeners. This interview was originally recorded on August 19th, 2020. To start with, would you like to introduce yourself for listeners?
Sure. I'm Juanita Burnett. I've been in Guelph for 26 years now, which blows my mind a little. And I've been a student, a mom, an activist, And now, not today, I work part-time at the university library.
Okay. What is the status? Can I ask what job at the university looks like at this uncertain time?
So I just sent an email to my boss because last time we talked, it was going to be, as often happens, if I'm not working in the summer, I'll start either the end of August or early September back in the stacks. And this year, because of the weirdness, they said probably September 8th. And now they're reassessing and they're not sure. So,
yeah. There's a lot of question marks, and it seems not so far from now, and I'm not sure when the questions plan to be answered.
Yeah.
Well, let's move backwards. What has life during the pandemic been like? Can we go back to March? Where were you in March, and what changed
back
then?
Back to March. So it was pretty weird for me up to March 16th. I was still working. So I walked to work on March 16th and did my job. And then early in the morning, there was a meeting downstairs to talk a little bit about what might be coming, what had been happening. And I ended up feeling faint and being sent home for no real reason. But when you add in the middle of a pandemic, everything seems really weird. So my collective agreement at the job doesn't have sick days, but because it almost got passed, they have been giving sick days to people at the library that aren't covered under their, they give 2 sick days a year, I think it is, to people if it's not in their agreement.
Okay.
So I got that. And by the time I would be going back, they had decided that we weren't to come back. And I think the library officially closed on the 20th of March. So,
yeah, that was about, I think, almost an entire week later than us up at the station at the university. I was going up that week, that same week that you were working, I guess, but the station had closed and I was installing software and stuff to try to make things remote. And I have to admit, it was kind of surreal to see business as usual at other parts of the university for that week.
Yeah. But it seemed to change almost daily.
How did you feel about it during that week? Were people already starting to operate differently in the spaces, or were they really actually doing things like they normally would, as though this wasn't hovering on the horizon?
So I think by the 20th, they were already looking at ways people could work remotely. And that was actually going to be a consideration for something I could do. Just do some data process, data input on a laptop. And they were going to bring a laptop here. And then they decided it wasn't my work, so I couldn't do that. So there was a lot of uneasiness about what do I do? Mm-hmm. and then there was, am I laid off? And then my son actually reminded me to check when the contract ended, which was May 22nd. So I ended up just reminding them of that and got paid from work until then, which spread the time period out a little bit.
Yeah, it's not nothing.
No, it's not nothing.
That is an unusual shift, too, when things were open and you had to decide if you were sick or not or comfortable or not. That was going into, like, sick considerations. But as soon as everyone decided that it was closed, then work looks different, I guess.
Yeah.
What would your job have looked like normally, like your part-time library position pre-pandemic? What kinds of responsibilities and stuff did you have?
So basically, we go in, take books upstairs that have been returned, shelve them after we pull our holds. So if people request books from the library, we pull people's holds for them. We shelf books. That's kind of it.
Is a university library, like, is it typically other universities that people are pulling from? Like, is it an academic kind of sharing that goes on there mostly?
Yeah, it's switching. When I first started, and for a long time, they had the tri-university group. So Wilfrid Laurier, Waterloo, and Guelph shared a lot of resources. So we would get requests for books for all the universities. And I think in the last year, they've changed to a greater number of universities.
Oh.
So, like, just in the last few months, it's been going. So it doesn't necessarily say where the request is from. They're in no real specific order for that.
Okay.
So we just pull one and, yeah.
Yeah, that's interesting. How does a pandemic change this work? I know that it's been the summer, so there aren't as many enrolled students statistically anywhere, but going back into the fall and with the university still being some amount of closed, are people still moving physical books around, or will they be?
They weren't for a long time. I think last month sometime they started doing some requests, and I'm not sure exactly who is pulling the books, but it would be for pickup only, so people don't come into the library. It's just certain people are authorized to pull the books, and I don't know exactly how it works, but...
But they're trying? They're trying to figure out...
They're trying, yeah.
All right, so once the university closed, and then you still had your contract for a few months, but what did your life change to look like during that time?
Well, I'm sure you know or have heard people talk about all the things you don't do because you're too busy working or whatever. When you're stuck in the house, there's time to, like, be in your house a lot and try to figure out things that you've put off for too long. So that's been kind of cool.
Can you share some of those things? I mean, I do know that this is true. I also know that despite maybe the inclination to do those things or to think of what those things are, that doesn't necessarily mean that everybody was in the right kind of headspace or, you know, mindset to be doing the things. So I would be curious some of the stuff you got up to, what you were able to manage.
Yes, definitely. So once it settled in that I was actually going to be paid until May, I didn't have to think about that so much. Mm-hmm. So I started, I'm in a one bedroom apartment now that I moved to 5 years ago from a two bedroom, three floor townhouse.
Wow.
So there was a whole lot of purging. I have way too many books and a whole lot of other stuff that I had to get rid of, but also still have. So that's been an ongoing thing for 5 years, I guess. Plus, I also still buy books.
Yeah.
But one of the things I ran into is, what do I do with the stuff that I decided I don't want anymore? Mm-hmm. So I have a number of bags over in my hall closet to figure out where to take them, when I can take them somewhere. Mm-hmm. So I'm thinking about calling around to see if organizations are picking up again yet. I don't know if they are.
Mm-hmm. That was on my mind a lot, actually, when people were talking about doing projects, even things like people working on their houses or trying to do repairs. I was like, where did the things go? I think our backyard just became kind of like a holding tank for random garbagey things until the dumps opened up again. The dumps are open, though. That's something.
Yeah, yeah. One of the things I would do if it was a few things at a time is I would take it to the laundry room so other people in the building could use it.
Oh,
and
okay.
They often would. But in the last few months, I didn't feel comfortable doing that because, you know, first we had no idea how things were passed around. So you don't want to do that. Mm-hmm. And I was a little concerned things would just get thrown out if they were left there. So I didn't want to do that.
What is apartment etiquette during a pandemic?
It's a little strange. The townhouse I lived in, it's funny, a lot of the people that lived in the townhouses, because it's geared to income housing, some of the neighbors from there are now here.
Okay.
So that's kind of cool. But in the apartment building, we're not in each other's faces quite as much, except maybe in the lobby or just outside the door, which can be challenging. Mm-hmm. You know, people smoke, and that's a good place to sort of hang out, but sort of not. And I tend to just stick to my apartment when I'm here. And luckily, one of my best friends that also lived at the townhouses is in the balcony next to me. So we have coffee visits sometimes from our balconies.
I love that.
Yeah.
And have you been growing a vegetable garden? Is that what I've been seeing photos of?
I have been growing, yes. I've been growing tomatoes and beans. So most of the time I have a bit of cat grass in the near side of a big pot on my balcony because my cat likes to go out there and chew cat grass. So I grow other things around it. The beans came up really well. The basil did well in the beginning, but now it's too shaded by the tomatoes, which took over everything. And the beans, which kind of hold the tomatoes up now, but the tomatoes actually started in a whole other pot, but they've grown up and over the railing, up and over into the corner. So it's fun.
That's amazing that that's working so successfully from a pot.
Yeah. Yeah.
Have you done tomatoes before?
I've done tomatoes before and had good luck with them on the balcony. I've always tried to grow things, but a balcony is a new thing, so the first year or two, it took a little bit to figure out. Last year, I actually planted 3 corn plants in my balcony pot and was mostly amused that they grew at all, but I got 2 tiny little, like about 2-inch cobs.
Wow. That's actually kind of incredible, though.
Yeah, yeah. So part of it is just the fun of trying to see what's going to happen.
Yeah. Yeah, I wasn't sure if you had been a vegetable gardener before. I feel like I like the idea of it a lot. In previous years, I've traveled more during the summer when my kids aren't in school, and so I will start a garden and then abandon it. And then I come back and it is what it is. And so this year was the first year where I was like, I'm pretty sure I'm not going anywhere. And I think a lot of people had that mindset towards gardening, but then also the weird kind of like, I don't know, apocalypse style, we should be growing our own food feelings. And I'm curious how it's working out for people when there's sort of, at least in my case, slight guilt. Like if you have space at all, it should be doing something. And that doesn't necessarily mean you're a farmer, you know?
Yeah. When we first moved to Guelph, my son and I, we lived at Wellington Woods. And we moved July 1st. So the next year, they had garden plots up kind of where Zeller's is now by Best Buy. They had garden plots we could pay $5 for at the beginning to get our spot. And then after you cleaned it up, you got your $5 back at the end of the season, which was really amazing. And for my son and I, it was really great to sort of just play around and see what grew and what didn't. And we would often cut across Dairy Bush Hill to his daycare in the mornings and pull carrots or peas or beans to eat on the way.
Aww.
Yeah. But also those long summers where you just get so you don't really want to do anything in the garden. You know, once the weeds really start, you don't want to be in there. So it was really fun to do, but we weren't great at it.
Yeah.
But my kid got to see the neighbors around us would have like green, like, I don't know, farmers markets full of stuff in the same spot we had, you know, six sunflowers and whatever. But yeah.
Yeah. What are some of the, I guess, maybe other hobbies you've leaned into or things you've seen happening around you during the pandemic that maybe are different than would normally be happening this time of year?
Okay. I love books. I love buying books. I love having books. I quite like reading books, but don't always spend a lot of time reading, and especially nonfiction. Mm. Part of me keeps hoping that I'll sort of by osmosis get everything in from the books that I have around me. But I've actually been able to like read nonfiction, and that's been really cool.
What do you think has shifted to make that more possible?
I guess the time, space, energy thing. You know, I'm here. I have the books. With all the Black Lives Matter stuff, there's been a lot coming up around. Like, the first one I finally read, no, actually, I just got it, so it's new. The Skin We're In by Desmond Cole. I was able to just pick it up, and it's a really straightforward read. Hmm. So I skimmed through that really fast. And then I saw somebody I follow on Twitter came out with a book called Entitled about how men feel so entitled to so many different things. So I ordered that from the bookshelf, and I started reading it like the night I got it, I guess, and went to sleep late. And the next day I picked it up again and finished it.
Wow.
And Robin Maynard's Policing Black Lives, I've had for a while, but it sort of sat around. I started reading it and then get busy doing other things. And it's like so full of information and so well-researched, it's hard to just sit and read through it. Mm. But I've picked that up again, especially with all that's happening in the streets, with reading Desmond Cole's book. It seems like I'll get into that a little easier. So, yeah.
Do you find it easier to read books on topics when the real world is sort of having those same conversations? Or, yeah, like you're nodding. It feels like that could go either way. Like, you know, it can also be a lot of being submersed in something and feeling very overwhelmed too, right? But
yeah. I guess partly when I'm involved with some sort of activism, I want to know more and more about what I'm actually talking about. And also when you're talking to people like out in the streets, you have to be able to say what you feel and mean in better ways.
Yeah. It seems like a great opportunity to take in information, because if, depending on how your home situation is set up, whether or not you have space to yourself and time to process thoughts meaningfully, they can really go in there and not be, you know, might not be pulled in like a million different directions while it's happening. I also can empathize with people who have felt the need to disengage from reality during a pandemic too. Yeah. I don't really know if there's like a right or wrong approach to this thing.
Yeah, I don't think there is. And one of the things I'm being more and more aware of is that like we all don't know what we're doing. We're all trying to figure this out, and it changes from day to day. And in so many ways, I'm grateful that I live alone with the cat. And some days the cat annoys me. She's wanting in my space. So I really feel for people who are like in the same space, trying to share that space and figure out how to best to do that. Mm-hmm. The Zoom thing has been an evolution as well, I guess, and a mixed bag as well. It's been really great to see people again. But also for a while, I was having Zoom meetings all the time, and it was getting to be a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Does it feel like real socializing? Like, do you manage to get immersed enough in it that you start to become less aware of the fact that it is, in fact, still a screen? Or is that always kind of there?
It's there, I guess. It depends which thing. One of the things we've been able to do, I'm also a member of the Communist Party of Canada. So we have a really small club in Guelph, but there are a couple people in Kitchener-Waterloo that would like to join as well. But there aren't a lot of cars in our club either. Mm. We're often people that don't have a lot of money. So being able to connect with them on Zoom has been a lot easier. At least we can do it more frequently.
Right.
So that's been good. And then I'm also part of the Provincial Executive Council Committee for the Communist Party. So I talk to people in Toronto, mostly Toronto, Ottawa, on regular Zoom meetings as well. And that's been really great. And I feel like because there are six of us on the provincial executive, it's a really nice number to be able to have a conversation and get things done. And it's been really great to see them regularly, which I don't often do because they're not in Guelph. So,
yeah. What would the non-pandemic version of getting together have looked like? Like, how often did those groups meet up before?
So maybe a couple times a year.
Okay.
Depending on if something's going on, but often about that.
Mm-hmm.
So for a while we were meeting once a week, and then, you know, maybe once every couple of weeks.
Wow. And
so, yeah. So that's been good.
Yeah. Are you seeing progress then in topics and actions and stuff that, like, are things moving quicker or more swiftly with this access?
A little bit, I think so. Yeah. But again, like, how it's trickier to carry it into the real world as well. Yeah. So,
yeah. Well, so we don't know what everyone else is doing, obviously, beyond what people share, but the optimist in me has chosen to assume that a lot of the silence or unknowns around my friends' activities are planning, our work, our research, or, you know, like traditionally my friends who are artists say when they disappear for months at a time, it is usually followed by some sort of new album or a new piece or something they've been working on. And so it is interesting. Usually these cycles go with like a couple of months of dormant, usually over the winter, in fact, is when most people sort of disappear. And then on the other side, you see a spring of all of these new things. And I keep thinking that on some side, on another side, will, yeah, you know, all these groups that have met more often or been able to have more focused conversations all potentially will be able to launch things that are far more developed and thought out than in the past when they've had to sort of tuck that in around the other responsibilities. But we've been on this sort of enforced break for so long that I'm not even sure what other side will mean at this point.
Yeah.
Have you generally found that it's been working for you? Like, for the way that your brain works and your disposition and stuff, are you in more in the camp of, like, surviving or thriving?
Yes.
That's a good answer.
In some ways, it's been really good. Yeah. You were asking earlier about some of the things we've been doing. And so, credit card debt. Mm-hmm. My son has been on me about trying to deal with my credit card stuff for a long time. It was just building and building and building. And over the last, like over this, since I've been inside, I actually made a consumer proposal. It was accepted. And so now I don't owe, I don't have to keep paying interest on my credit card debt now. So, you know, in 5 years with some smaller payments that are less than what my payments were regularly, I will be done.
Wow. Yeah. That's huge.
Yeah. So that was a really great thing. It was amazing. I've been writing a little bit. I helped someone that was also from the PEC write a piece for People's Voice, which is our labor newspaper, about long-term care.
Wow.
And writing. So I don't know if you've been to a breezy breakfast or
know
much about that.
I know a little bit about it, but not, I haven't attended. I mean, for listeners who maybe know nothing about it, you can absolutely maybe tell us a bit about that. And then, yeah.
Yeah. So it's been 4 years, I guess now, four and something. It started with like a weekly breakfast at the Breezy Corners restaurant downtown with a couple of counselors, just so you could talk about issues that were concerning you. And it's been evolving. And since the pandemic, it's been evolving like really, really quickly. So for a long time, it was just the breakfast. And then it started to be, here's what the speaker's going to be this week at the breakfast. And then when we had to go to Zoom, it added a whole other dimension. So people didn't have to leave their house, so they could show up for the breakfast. Well, the conversation, you had to make your own breakfast. But there is now a Breezy Bullhorn, which is little pieces that come from people that are at the breakfast and decide to write about issues. And I've written a couple things for that now. And the weekly meetings are now turning into a podcast. And yeah, that's really exciting.
You're listening to Bridging the Social Distance, a show recorded here in Guelph at CFRU as a platform for sharing stories and perspectives during the global pandemic of COVID-19. This show is also being syndicated for CIOI in Hamilton, Ontario. Today I'm speaking with Juanita Burnett here in Guelph.
Yeah, it's on CFRU now, and it has some name along the lines of the Breezy, but yes, I think it maybe has been slightly rebranded, but...
Yeah, well, I guess the Breezy Corners isn't the Breezy Corners downtown now?
Yeah, I mean, it's I'm not sure which spaces are things anymore. It seems like we've lost a lot during this time.
Yeah. Yeah, I just recently found out that the Albion has been closed for a while, not COVID-related.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, the whole kind of conversation around who owns or operates those spaces is like a whole side of things where hopefully those folks are being supported or finding resources. The spaces themselves, though, like, I mean, I think that when you're describing of the Breezy Breakfast is a really good example of if a space was just sort of the environment that something could happen in. But when you learn what you can do without a space at all, it's like, of course, you are sad about why you lose spaces, but recognizing like what you can do without them, it sometimes expands to allow access to a lot more people, not just people who can't make their way into spaces in their own town, but even people from other cities. And the idea of these types of conversations being contributed to from a broader range of perspectives seems really healthy, too. So it's like, kind of feels like having the rug pulled out from under you, or I don't know if that's the right analogy, but a lot can be achieved when you have to figure it out. And I think a lot of us didn't really lean into the ways that these could have been made more accessible all along because we had a space. And so part of me is excited to see what happens without spaces, mostly because I'm excited if it undermines greedy landlords. But I want like the people that operate spaces I love to be okay. But I'm also excited to see, like, I've heard the same kind of feedback from people who run like dance classes or even performers to some extent, people who have like anxiety in public or being out in spaces or have accessibility challenges are finding that they can attend things that they couldn't before. And so, you know, your hope is that even if we get to go back to spaces, that we don't forget who we opened up and included during this time and don't just close the door on that, you know? But
Yeah. I discovered a Facebook. I don't think it's just Facebook, but I found out about it. It's a men's group, which apparently is out of Ottawa, but they had a book club. And I ended up saying, yeah, I want to go, and then realizing it was a men's group, but was welcomed in. And oh, wow. I guess the book club thing is open to people. It's just they meet separately, but it's an amazing bunch of young men who are like trying to learn about issues. And I think Policing Black Lives was their book.
Oh, wow.
For the club. And so I'm like, yeah, I want to talk about that with other people. And it was just really an amazing space. And after my one meeting, I said, you know, I would love to be included if I can at some point down the road. And they're like, yeah. And we're hoping to get it back in person, which is in Ottawa. So,
right. Yeah.
Yeah. So it was really exciting to find out this exists. But, yeah.
Maybe Guelph could have a chapter of such a thing, though.
I might try to find out more about that, because it sounds like an amazing idea.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, is there actually, like, the fact that it was born out of a group of young men, does that, like, really impact the conversations in a significant way?
I think so. It's a group of young men who are trying to, like, educate themselves, deal with their privilege, deal with their issues in a healthier way. Mm-hmm. And so they've chosen the book for the next book club, and it's Caliban and the Witch, which is about how women's labor has been had been taken over by capitalism or something. I haven't read it yet, but I am going to read it just on the off chance I get to take part in the book club again.
Yeah.
But they try to look at things in a different, healthier way, and it's amazing. So
it is amazing. It does strike me as something that if there were to be a Guelph branch, it would sort of have to be, you know, if it was going to be a group of young men, it does sort of have to be up to them in a way. Like,
yeah.
It's one of those, yeah, when you see that something exists and it makes you so happy, but you know it could only have existed if they made it a priority, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm so curious what new things are on the horizon. And how did you even find that book club?
I don't know. I don't know if I was talking about another book, or it might have been a comment on something about the skin we're in or something. And then I don't know how Facebook works.
Yeah, I just think it's amazing that people who I've had a few international hangouts that would have never happened otherwise. And my theory for myself is that if I was choosing between a screen and someone halfway across the world versus someone in my own town who I could have a real face-to-face interaction with, I think there would have been a certain amount of guilt in choosing the computer version of social. And yeah. It's been nice to have everybody kind of be on that same Zoom screen, even if we're here in the same town together, we're using the same technology. And so there's, less, absolutely less guilt around who I choose to spend time with and what that looks like.
Yeah. It's been a strange mix of people you can choose to spend time with, just based on, you know, who might live near enough you can visit in the outside, or who you're choosing to talk to. So, you know I've reached out a little bit more to some people that I don't normally talk to. I have a couple of friends in the States who, you know, I just want to know, are you safe? Are you okay? Where I might not have done that, you know, I may just talk to them, you know, commenting on a Facebook post or something. Mm-hmm. And trying to make more of an effort to, for example, call my sister, even though she doesn't talk a lot anymore. So she's in a nursing home, and a conversation might last 5 minutes, but if I can make the effort, I can feel better, even if she may or may not remember it anymore.
I think speaking as someone who's been entering a lot of retirement residences remotely, I think it means a lot. I think even the smallest interactions are counting for a lot in these days when there's so many moments that don't have that, right?
Yeah.
What are some things that you think will come out of this? Maybe locally, like maybe seeing how some things have changed, like the Breezy Breakfast model and some of the spaces you've watched close, but maybe some of the relationships or conversations that have gotten some traction. What are some hunches as to what the next little while might look like if we get to, like, say in a scenario where we keep low sickness numbers, or maybe not, maybe your prediction is dark and gloomy, I don't know, but what is your hunch, as to some things that might happen after this?
One of the things we talked about at our club meeting, our Zoom club meeting, is going forward, it would be good to continue those, even if it's not as often. Just remembering, we don't have to always meet in person. It will be really nice to be able to do that. But also, it can be easier for all of us to get together for an hour on a computer instead of trying to figure out how to get rides, where to meet, all that stuff. So some mix of that, I guess, for a lot of things. And I don't know if, for example, we're back to the actual restaurant Breezy Breakfasts, if a computer can be brought in so people who can't make it out can still join. Some sort of weird mix of that, I guess.
I hadn't really thought about that, but I mean, one thing I noticed personally was the commute, which in my case is still in town, but how much time I got back when there didn't have to be any physical separation between waking up and going to work, like this seamless, and being able to leave work in the middle of the day and go back to work in the middle of the day for 5 minute, 2 hour, 4 hour intervals. I got a lot of time back because the sort of the weight and the amount of things I'd have to think about to prepare myself to leave for a day of unknowns, like both mentally and physically and outfit wise and everything. And I've gotten all of that back. So it's true when you're discussing, you know, the considerations around, can we find transportation or how long for us to get there? All the things you could accomplish in that same amount of time if you didn't even have to take the time to have the conversation, let alone the actual reality of how long it would take to pull it off. So, yeah, it is kind of like being given back a lot of time. Yeah. Mm. With the breezy breakfast one's interesting because you do wonder what environments or, you know, ceremonies like food sharing are the reason that get some people out the door and in the building that wouldn't have been intrigued by the conversation. You know, some people it's the conversation first, but for other people, perhaps it's the gathering that is the point, and maybe some of that's lost when they're not leaving their homes. And so, yeah, it's interesting to, or it will be, to see whether in that who's there changes and why that has changed.
Mm-hmm. I think with Zoom, there is the chat function, which sort of allowed some conversations that weren't necessarily directed exactly at the topic at the meeting, which sort of was like in real life where you're there half listening to the conversation and talking to the person you're having breakfast with. But
I never went to the breezy breakfast, mostly because I do try to avoid spending money out in the world unless like I sort of prioritize that bit of my budgeting for family or, you know, going for a meal with my partner or it being pure leisure. It's hard for me, the idea of spending money while doing like really important thinking. It's just a strange kind of hang up I have around budgeting. And so I sort of even forgot that I could start going to these things now that they're not in a restaurant.
Well, one of the great things I noticed, I went for breakfast because I arranged my schedule. So that was my shorter day at work. Mm. So I could go to breakfast and then go there. So I would eat before I went to work. But also people were allowed to have a coffee or a tea and not breakfast, or even just bring their own water or tea or.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And the other thing I loved about the restaurant is there's a donated breakfast program that they had going on there. So you could pay, I think it was $5.99 added to your bill. And what it would be is a takeout breakfast for someone who needed it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, that is a pretty neat thing.
Yeah.
Okay, I want to ask the question. You've been a listener of my show, so you know some of my questions I ask everybody. But I would love to ask the question around support. And it's been interesting watching sort of how people's answers have changed as different types of support have been rolled in. And but I'm curious if there's something that jumps out to you as a form support could or should take that would maybe support more people. Or, I mean, maybe it's just a matter of like support people that you are seeing that have been slipping through the cracks. But, or maybe you want to point to something that's worked really well, where you've seen people supported that weren't before. But I'm curious what your answer would be in terms of what support could or should look like during a pandemic.
Yeah, part of me thinks we need to get this figured out before the next one.
That's such a good answer.
So one of the things that I've had to figure out somehow is I was getting grocery delivery for a little while in the beginning when I still had a credit card. And now I don't. So I'm trying to figure out how to work around that. And so I've been getting more bulk barn shopping because they'll do it. And then I can just go and pick it up and pay there.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe more of that kind of thing, if it's more out there and more, if more businesses can let you know that's an option.
Yeah.
Not just in a pandemic, because there are a lot of people who have a hard time getting out and getting groceries or shopping for too long or whatever.
Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah. Talk a bit more about that one. That is a really poignant example. Because I hadn't thought about the fact that the grocery delivery relied on credit cards. And that is interesting because I don't think that the very people that would need grocery delivery would necessarily be the sort of people that would be carrying a credit card around. Like, I mean, some, yeah, obviously, but like, I feel like that would leave a lot of people out.
Yeah. Yeah. It worked really well for a while, except there were only a couple stores that did it, or at least that were easily found to do it.
Mm-hmm.
So the other thing, I guess, related, like, I don't have a car. I don't have a lot of money. I work part-time. I live in social housing. I don't want to go out a whole lot shopping. So now I try to maybe get out once a week to get shopping, which means a lot of bags of groceries to carry home for the most part. You know, I don't want to call somebody up all the time to take me to get groceries, partly because I'm too damn independent, but also timing. People are busy doing other things, and then the whole getting in a car with somebody.
Yeah.
So I'm happy the buses are still running. I'm concerned about the buses going forward.
Oh, that's interesting. And we're encouraging people not to be taking rides from people and sharing spaces. And yeah, but we still have not really addressed the lack of walkable grocery stores with actual groceries that people would want for a well-balanced diet.
Yeah.
Especially affordability. It feels like the only ones on foot are so expensive for the central places.
I'm lucky that I'm fairly healthy physically, and I'm fairly close to, you know, the metro.
Mm-hmm.
Not the metro in Montreal. So I can walk and get groceries for the most part. But like I said, when you're carrying big bags of groceries home, it's a trek.
Mm-hmm.
And not everybody here is as healthy as I am.
And if this encourages into the fall and winter, then we've got other considerations too.
Yep.
Can you think of how we could do that better? Like, I guess you mentioned a couple ways, like if there are places that are offering alternatives, making that more known. But is there an example of somewhere it works really well that you do utilize that you think like that model could be applied to other types of stores or other grocery stores? Like, how does Bulk Barn do it, for example?
So Bulk Barn, I go online, I pick out the things that I want, which is a learning curve as well, because it's like, how much do I usually get? Like, is 100 grams three handfuls? Or
yeah.
But you just send them your order, and then they call you, and you can come, and they have the bag at the door, and you just pay at the door. So you don't have to go in and look and all that stuff. But you still have to get there.
Yeah.
I know Sweet was delivering candy, which was awesome.
Yeah.
I don't know if they're still doing that, but that was actually a really good way to get through the first part of the pandemic, is having candy delivered.
Oh, I loved it. It was bundled with the comic book deliveries. That was a great combination. That was pretty brilliant.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And like I said, I'm really concerned about the bus service going forward. I think we really need to make sure our Guelph Transit is publicly available to everyone, even without the student bus pass program.
Yeah.
Like, it's, you know, I get that they're not doing it this year because there are going to be few students on campus, but that leaves a whole big question.
Yeah. There's a lot of questions, a lot of work I hope people are doing behind the scenes. That same thing I mentioned earlier of the optimist in me wants to believe that all of these people are hard at work with their plans and their solutions, and that these question marks aren't going to stay questions. But I really don't know.
One of the things I learned from the Breezy Breakfast, they've been talking about tax programs that, you know, what are the municipalities going to do without the tax base? And it turns out in Guelph, at least, almost all the taxes have been collected without any problem. So there are a couple programs where people could put it off if they had to, and they haven't really been used. So so our tax base isn't really reduced, like getting any worse. So I'm hoping this attempt to keep, you know, taxes from going up at all next time gets turned down, because, you know, if people can afford to pay for services, we need them to be paid for.
Yeah. All right. Well, unbelievably, we're already almost at an hour. I want to ask my question around silver linings. So we addressed maybe some of the things that haven't been solved and are still kind of question marks. But are there things you've seen emerge during this time? I'm sure you've already mentioned a few in this conversation, but things you've seen emerge that have been bright spots that you would love to see continued. So absolutely, you already mentioned with the with your one of your groups that you may continue to meet online. Are there other examples of things you've seen that you'd love to see continued, even if we do get to return to the way we were doing things?
I'm thinking one of the things that's been in my head a lot is, and I think I might have said it before, we don't know what the heck we're doing here. And we're all doing the best we can. And that's not always great. Mm-hmm. I know I've had times where, you know, everything's fine, everything's wonderful, and times where it's really hard to know what to do next or how to get through things. I'm getting grumpy sometimes, yelling at the cat. And she's a sweetheart. But, keeping that in mind, I guess, and taking the time going forward to spend time with our families, but also with ourselves. Like, I've also had to, like, start to think about, you know, who am I? What am I? What do I want to do? And I don't have a lot of answers just yet, but I hope we'll take that going forward.
Yeah. I am glad to hear that people are spending that time considering themselves. It seems like a key piece to figuring out how we work together, right? Is to know what you're bringing to the table.
Yeah.
This whole time of, this is actually, I think, the 99th interview I've done in this series.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And at about somewhere around 60 or 70, I think, I had this sort of funny revelation where it felt like it really spoke to me when you made the comment that you hope that we'll figure this out for the next time, because that's how it's felt for me. Like, it's this big puzzle and I'm collecting pieces and I have no idea how many pieces there are, but they're all still contributing and building some broader sense of it all for me and helping clarify things. And I feel stronger and stronger all the time in terms of feeling prepared to navigate things like this going forward. But it's also the more puzzle pieces you get, the more you start to see other pictures emerge, and then they're not done. And you're like, so it's complicated. You learn a lot more, and then you learn how much you don't know yet. But I'm hoping that people are really leaning into figuring out themselves. That seems like such a strong point. Because, you know, when we saw the whole caremongering thing get off the ground and stuff relatively quickly, it was interesting to think of how many people came to the table offering resources who probably had never had to consider what they had to offer before. Yeah. Or at least not in that way, right?
Yeah.
Well, is there anything else you'd like to share or add?
The one thing I discovered online the other day that I think would be really important going forward. So I forget what it's called, but it's a website. It's ca.thrive, health.health/COVID-19/EN, okay, which is a self-check for COVID-19.
Oh.
So it walks you through a questionnaire about if there's anything going on with you. And I was thinking about it. There are things you don't really think about that could be symptoms of this.
Oh.
And especially when people are going to be going to schools, going back to work, it would be really good if people like check in fairly often just to see, you know, do I need to get tested? Is there a problem? Or isn't there? Just to ease people's minds. So,
oh, that'll be such a good resource too when we start to see the common colds, etc., coming in and confusing things too. Even during this period of time with allergies, I know there's a particular allergen out in our world that makes throats sore, and no one wants to feel that right now. And I've heard a few people share that, but it's like a whispered allergy that we don't want to.
Or menopause, like. Is it a fever? No, it's just a hot flash again.
Those are such, everybody's coming from so many different environments.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for sharing that. That does sound extremely useful. What are your plans for the next little bit? What is, are you returning to the university, or is that still kind of in the question mark?
It's still the plan, as far as I know.
Yeah.
I'm not sure exactly what my boss meant, if it's going to be pushed off a little, if they're going to adjust it somehow.
Oh, that's right. You're saying maybe September 8th, but still kind of like,
Yeah.
Do you have any personal plans regardless of that for your next intentions for the next little bit?
I want to read and write more. As always, but now there's a bit more time to do it.
Yeah.
And I still want to figure out what I want to be when I grow up.
Don't we all?
Yeah.
Well, I really appreciate you connecting with me today, and I loved this, and thanks for being a listener to my show. It's nice to know I have one of those.
It's been a good feeling. An amazing show, and it's the guests you have on are really, really amazing.
Awesome. Well, I get really excited that I get to choose them, and the sort of so-called important guest, in air quotes, gets to be completely thrown out the window, and I get to, you know, reclaim some space for people with stories that we haven't heard, hopefully. So,
yeah. Popcorn. Nice.
That's true. Popcorn. Yeah.
Yeah.
That was a good comeback story.
That was really good, yeah.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Juanita. And hopefully we'll see each other out in the real world at some point sooner than later, too.
Oh, I hope so. I so miss karaoke.
Me, too. I'm trying to figure that one out in a big way. So I'll let you know if I solve it.
Awesome. Great to see you, Jenny.
You, too. Bye, Juanita.
Bye.
So once again, that was Juanita Burnett, a balcony gardener, book addict, communist, library worker, feminist, and karaokeist here in Guelph. That brings us to the end of this episode of Bridging the Social Distance, a show produced at CFRU in Guelph and syndicated for CIOI in Hamilton, Ontario, that aims to create a platform for us sharing what we are doing to get through this time together in the wake of COVID-19.
You're listening to The Hawk 101.5 FM in Hamilton, Ontario.
This is Jazz in Session, 101.5 The Hawk and CFRU 93.3. My name is Kareem Mosna. Thank you so much for joining me. Coming up very shortly, a very special guest joins me from New York City. I'll tell you a bit more about him coming up very shortly. But first, how about an all-Canadian set of jazz to kick off the show? And we'll begin with a selection from the early 90s at a time when jazz and hip-hop were mixing together. From Toronto, the Dream Warriors. takes a Quincy Jones classic and does their thing with it. As they call it, my definition of a boombastic jazz style to get jazz in session.
My definition of a boombastic jazz style.